Okay, welcome. Tonight is February 1st, 2020. It is the 11th lecture of the 9th season, The Times of Shabbosai Tzvi. Last week we were talking about the Ramchal and the controversy that it sparked. And the main reason why there was a controversy is because many years earlier, this is around the 1720s, about 70 years earlier, was the Shabbosai Tzvi. And among the Jewish people, there were still issues that they were having, secret Sabbateans, and they either were afraid that Ramchal was either a secret Sabbatean, he had some of the trappings, or that the Ramchal was a new sect. You know, now we have a new issue, a new guy, a new sect coming up the pipe, and therefore they felt they had to deal with it. What I thought first is what we would do is just to quickly catch up, just go through the little bit, the back and forth of where we were last week when we ended. So when we opened up again, we opened up that the Ramchal, Rab Moshe Chaim Lozato, his Rebbe was Rabbi Yishaya Bassan from early on till the age of 15. So, he was from Italy, so that's a good question. I'm assuming he came in on the Sephardic side, because the way they talk about the Ashkenazim, him and his Rebbe, Rabbi Bassan, they talk about the Ashkenazim. We saw it last time. The Ashkenazim. They pervert the Kabbalah. They make mistakes. So, I'm guessing. You know, what's so from a name like Lozato? But it's an Italian name. They had their own a little bit. Italy had their own. I guess their own minhagim and mesorah, all the way through from the second base of Mikdash. So, but I'm guessing they came in more on the side of the Sephardim than Ashkenazim. Okay, so Rav Moshe Chaim, his Rebbe was Rav Yishaya Bassan from the age of 18. We mentioned this. And Rav Yishaya Bassan's father-in-law was Rav Binyamin HaKohen, who was an expert Kabbalist, who had a Mesorah from Rabbi Moshe Zakuto. And and at the end of Rav Binyamin's life, the Ramchal would talk with him in Kabbalah, I guess, tell him what he had learned and what he knew. We mentioned last time the Ramchal sent a letter to Rabbi Binyamin HaKohen explaining how it worked. How did he get these messages? How did the Maggid work? We mentioned that he was concentrating on a certain yichud, a certain, I guess, name, something that would bring a person to a spiritual level. And while he was in that level, he fell into a slumber. And a Maggid came to him. He said, I have a secret for you. Told him a secret. He said the next day, you know, he wanted to make sure the same time of the day he was alone, which he did, and he came and he gave another secret. And this happened day after day, until one day he told him that he was a Maggid, and that the Maggid he was sent from heaven, and he transmitted a certain other Yehudim to keep in mind, to bring him up on a higher spiritual level that he can receive more. So this is like, you know, he's going higher and higher. And this is what he's writing to Rabbi Binyamin HaKohen, the father-in-law of Bassan. He continues, afterwards, at some point, he gave him permission to ask questions and gave him special tikkunim. So besides the yichud, things that he would have in mind and thinking in order to raise himself to a certain level, the neshama needs a certain tikkun, a certain things to do, to do a sort of a tshuva, sort of something to help the neshama in and of itself. And then afterwards, he said that Eliyahu HaNavi is going to come, and he did. And he also was commanded to write a sefer on Kehelas, which he did. When Eliyahu came, he told him other secrets, and Eliyahu said that don't know if it's Eliyahu that said or his Magid that told him, Metatron, which is the Malach in charge in Shemayim, would be coming. And when he came, he knew it was him. Oh, because Eliyahu Navi told him that Tatron was coming. And after that, I guess he reached a level that anytime a neshama or a soul or some spiritual force came to him, he was able to recognize the neshama or the malach or whatever it was that was coming to him. And now he says, and afterwards he'd wake up and he would start writing what he was taught, the secrets that he was taught. So he took him right after falling on his face in a trance. He would see, okay, I will write down today most recent revelation. So what happened on this day? After falling on my face, I see holy souls in this dreamlike state. And honestly, I've not granted. And then this is important that what he writes here, because Rabbi San, when he's hearing the other side, he's getting nervous about his student. But he says, I have not grasped even half of that which the Arizal comprehended. The difference between us is the Arizal was not allowed to write down, and I was commanded to write these revelations down. Okay, and this is the letter that he wrote to Rebbe Yamin. So this is, he himself is telling what he was experiencing. We also mentioned last time when the Beis Din was deciding what to do and how do we act and what do we deal with. Who is this person? Is he good? Is he bad? Is he a fake? A fraud? Is he using oaths to try to force malachim or people to come to him? So there was a person by the name of Rafael Kimchi, Rafael Yisrael Kimchi, who was a chashev, a Kabbalist from Eretz Yisrael, who happened to have stayed by the Ramchal's house, and he himself witnessed. And this is what he was telling the Beis Din of what he himself witnessed. He fell, and he's telling that the Ramchal fell on his face, resting his head on the table for approximately half an hour. Afterwards, he stood up, quill in hand, and he rapidly wrote down in a very brief time, less than a half an hour, a folio or a folio and a half of the secrets of Torah. Everything was written down in the language of the Zohar, something which is beyond human intelligence and human writing ability. He did this many times.
What's a folio?
Huh? I think a folio is one page. One full page he would write down. I don't think it's a page and a half. I don't think it's two sides. I think it's one side. But and
same
size as now? Huh? I'm not sure. I don't know. But I guess they knew whatever a page was in those days, even still, in the language of the Zohar. And it was done without any crossing outs. So in Aramaic, and this, I guess he had whatever memory was still in him, and he was able to just continue writing it. And this is this is what Rav Kimchi told the Beis Din, what he witnessed. Okay, and this we mentioned also, the Ramchal was writing to a friend of his, or somebody, his acquaintance, which is Rav Emanuel Kalbo of Livorno. Livorno is, I think, also a city in Italy. And he's writing him because of all the, you know, buha that's happening, all the controversy, and you know, everybody's talking about this. So he said, I traveled to Reggio to visit Rabbi Yeshaya Basan. This is in 1730. Rechol Kimchi passed through Padua and got a small glimpse of the writing. He didn't say anything to me, but when he went to Venice, he related what happened. When I returned home, one thing led to another until it became known that an Ashkenazic Torah scholar, which was Rabbi Kusiel, that's the one, he was there in Italy studying to become a doctor, and he was learning in his Beis Medrash. He didn't know anything, and after 4 months, he figured it all out, and he asked me to teach him, which I did, and he wrote a letter to Rev Mordechai Yaffa, which is a Rav in Europe, I think in Venice. I'm not sure. We'll see. And that's it. This is what started it all. And we mentioned this was the letter that Vienna, right? In Vienna, this is the letter that Yekusiel Gordon wrote to Mordechai Yaffa, a large introduction to Rav Mordechai Yaffa. He knows your reputation. And I'd like to tell you something which it's an unbelievable thing, and nobody knows about it. And And it's just extraordinary. And he's saying now there is a certain young man, youthful in years, he's 23 years old. I'm referring to Rav Moshe Chaim Luzzatto. Even before, when he was only 14, he mastered all the writings of the Arizal, and he didn't reveal this even to his father. And I found out about it, but that's, you know, that I don't have to tell you how. I've been studying for a month, drinking from his water. He is a spark of Rabbi Akiva ben Yosef. We mentioned also he's buried right next to Rabbi Akiva in Tveri, what we know is Rabbi Akiva. It's been 8 months, and he keeps having, gets more secrets, and he wrote that the Academy on High descends to him, and he ordered him, with the approval of Hashem, to compose a book of Zohar, which he calls Zohar Tinyana. So he actually wrote the Zohar Tinyana. I guess this Zohar, the Zohar of Rav Shem Vayachai, was to get the Jews to where we were today. And the Zohar Tinyana was the Zohar to get the Jews to Mashiach. I guess that was the idea of the Zohar Tinyana. What he does is, an angel would speak through his mouth. We couldn't, however, hear a thing. And the angel would reveal secrets. Afterwards, my teacher would order Elio to immediately come and would reveal his secrets. Now, this is also a lie, which he says it's not true. But this is...
It was a mistake.
Elio came on his own. But, you know, here it's written how Elio and Navi, Rabbi Kasiel wrote, Elio and Navi actually was ordered to come. And there is a way to order spiritual beings, beings to come, and that's through oaths, some sort of shvuos that, you know, I have no idea what these are, but it's not a good thing. And when you do that, it causes problems.
I heard to do something like that is very dangerous.
Yeah.
Right.
I'll show you a little bit what Rav Yehuda Chassid said. But that was a very, very big mistake. But he didn't know, huh?
How does it open? If the Ramchal wants someone to know about it, he'll send his own letter. What's it his business?
Right, so it was a very, very big mistake.
But the second question is, he said somebody didn't even know.
Right.
That I can't wrap my head around. I could see getting excited and sending to people I know. It's a blind thing.
I guess after all this is all min hashamayim that this came about this way. They try to give a Rabbi Kasiel did it was they give a maybe a motive was to just try to he tried to do it that the Ramchal should be able to get some support. You know, it's a fundraising. He has a yeshiva and he wants a public svarim. It was very expensive. So maybe it was to have it be known and everybody would be all excited. Oh my gosh, Hashem has sent people speaking to this person. And then, you know, people would be excited when they heard about the Ramchal. At times, and who visited him? Metatron, Moshe Rabbeinu, Raya Mehemne, grandfather, the Abba Saba, Avram Saba, which is Avram, Rav Amnuna, the elder, and the known elder would come as well as other times King Mashiach and Adam Arishon. Okay, just to name a few would come. Okay, behold, and now he continues in the letter. He wrote an amazing composition on Kehelas, he was told to. And on the last Pasuk, B'yad Chazaka, he wrote 70 tikkunim? Okay, 70 tikkunim, 70 pshatim, just on that one last Pasuk of the Torah. He also wrote 3 volumes of the Torah, which covers until Vayetzi. We saw later in a different that he also made it to Miketz. All composed in the language of the Zohar. He knows Gilgulim, Tikkunim for each man, science of palmistry, and physiognomy, which is he could look at your palm and tell you everything you've done. He could look at your face and tell you all everything about you, I guess, Averis, Mitzvahs, and what Tikkunim originally... Permission was given only to reveal secrets of the Torah. Now the Maggid reveals everything to him. He keeps writing. He told me a great secret. It is common for Moshe Rabbeinu and Metatron to expound verses that they apply to him. And this is another biggie that he wrote that he shouldn't have wrote. It wasn't true. But the author And it says like Moshe Rabbeinu and Mitratron compare him to Reb Shimon bar Yochai. I mean, like, how could you even compare the two? But in every respect, and has become apparent to all. Okay, and he goes on, and that was the letter. That was the letter that he wrote. Okay, what then happened is this sparked a controversy. Reb Mordechai Yaffa sent it Reb Moshe Chagiz, who was on a crusade to bring out Reb Moshe Chagiz, Shabtai's Phoenix, the private ones, and it was so. Reb Moshe Chagiz sent a letter to the Venice Bezdin, and they said, "Deal with it." So, I'm going short. I just cut out a lot of slides. But then the Venetian Bezin decided at the end, after all their options and going back and forth, they were just going to write to Reb Bassan. And this is the last thing with the Venetian rabbinate ended up saying. And they said to Reb Bassan, we are telling you everything what's going on, and you should deal with it and basically tell your disciple not to basically keep it to yourself. Don't tell anybody about this. Don't stop writing. Don't publicize. And if you stay within your own base medrash, everything should be fine. And really, this could have been the end of it. Now, but what happened is, okay, and now the letter of the Ramchal to Rav Yeshaya Bassan, behold, during the time I was staying by the, and he's telling, you know, what his reason why he thinks this all happened, saying, while I was staying by the esteemed scholar Reb Bassan, this thing went out without my knowledge. In other words, Reb Yekusiel's letter, had the Ramchal been there, so the Ramchal would have seen the letter and he would have stopped the letter. He would have said, you can't write this, this is inaccurate. But he writes, I did not see the letter. And when it came to the ears of Rav Chagiz, he reacted as his custom and wrote to the rabbinate of Venice and caused the thing to be revealed, something which we try to keep it a secret. So he's explaining that's how it happened. Not like Rav Bassan, you know, just sent out the letter. It was the Ramchal wasn't there at the time, so he sent it out without the Ramchal knowing of it, with all of those mistakes. Now, now he says, behold...
Yeah, I'm sorry, a little bit of disrespect there with Ramchal, like the way he writes about Rabbi Chagiz, like he doesn't even say Rav, and
interesting,
it's his custom.
Interesting. Yeah. Reb Bassan, when it came to the ears of Chagiz, maybe
and
because
he reacted as if he's
well, custom. You're right. Very interesting that you wrote that, because basically maybe he felt that what Rav Chagiz did was really wrong. I mean, what Rav Chagiz did without any. No prior knowledge, no investigations, anything. He wrote, which he did, to the Bezdin of Venice, rend your garments and, you know, stop this, stop these terrible people. So, like, you know, I guess he's reacting to that, what Rav Chagiz did. Rav Chagiz, you know, really, I who am I to say who's right and wrong? But at least in the eyes of the Ramchal, these are translations of letters. But assuming the translations are accurate and he's writing in this way, maybe the understanding of how he reacted was because he was very upset. Who is this Rav Chagiz to say these terrible things about me? As a matter of fact, the next letter is he writes. Okay, but before that, the Ramchal... before we get to the letter again, which is also a very important letter that he wrote to Rav Chagiz, he writes to Rav Yeshaya Bassan that, and he tries to some of the mistakes, some of the things that people are saying. That I wish you that which I issue orders to Elio and Mitatron to come is a stupendous idiocy. I have no idea who's coming to me, and they all come. They come on their own. And regarding pronouncing oaths to force them to tell me secrets, I never use practical Kabbalah at all, for it is a grievous sin. He says, I don't, that's not me. All I know is they just come on their own. I'm not telling them to come. I'm here, I do my ichudim and I do my tikkunim, and whoever comes. I don't force anybody to come. That's what he said to his Reb Bassan. This is what happened, what should have happened is, the Ramchal, I guess, should have waited to for Rev Bassan to write him back, but he didn't. And after he sent out a letter to the Ramchal, based on what he knows about the letter of Rev Yekusiel, he wrote directly to the to Rev Moshe Chagiz. Now, after he wrote the letter to Rav Moshe Chagiz, he got a letter from Rav Bassan saying, don't write to Rav Chagiz. Or if you're going to write to Rav Chagiz, do it with tremendous humility. Okay? So this letter is, on I guess, on the Ramchal's part, a mistake in judgment. You know, he was just writing, like, just defending himself. But he was really taken the wrong way. It was taken the wrong way. And he writes to the real renowned Torah scholar who does all these wonderful things. May Hashem protect him. And I'm one of the lowest men and nothing compared to you. You acted on God's behalf out of concern that the vineyard that Klal Yisrael should not be destroyed by the followers of Shabsai Tzvi. But your excellence should know, however, that I have nothing to do with them. I'm a faithful member of Israel. I don't support Chas V'Shalom, those evildoers. A charge which you suspect me of as an evident in your writings. And it is true. He did suspect them of it. In addition, I'm neither a prophet nor an apprentice of prophet, and I have not made signs or miracles. If there exist such rumors, they are false and utterly without substance. I only have the portion which Hashem has given me. It's only to do his compassion and kindness and not through any merit on my part. Probably, if there would have been a period right there, and not any merit on my part, probably that would have been it. That would have been enough. Right. But now he continues. And the rest of this letter is really going to get him in trouble. First of all, he says, as it was accurately described in the letter of my associate, Rav Yekusiel. What did he mean? He meant the fact that I get Magidim coming to me. What did Rav Chagiz understand? Rav Chagiz understood that, oh, as everything is accurate, which means everything from ordering Eliyahu to come to knowing all Gilgulim to being compared to Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, it's all accurate. You know, as he said, it was accurate. I rejoice and cause others to rejoice. Let it be happy. Hashem revealed to me fine, I'm really only doing what Hashem, look, let's be happy, Hashem is communicating with us, nothing, you know. Then he brings in also, and this is, I'm not the only one, we know about the Beis Yosef, and who does he go, each according to his spiritual level, who are far greater than I. Why are you so angry? Were all these people detestable? In other words, if you're upset with me for getting a magid. Why, you're not upset with anybody else for getting a magid? Only me you're upset with? And now I haven't chosen to engage in strife to break apart the community into direct different sects. I'm not looking to come on, you know, make my way. I'm a big rabbi and follow me and let's change the Torah like Shabsai Tzvi did or make a different Judaism. That's it. I'm just learning on my own base medrash. I'm just learning on my own. So then how could you, who are like an angel of Hashem, jump to such a conclusion without any investigation and create such discord? Go question the rabbis of the city, especially the great Rav of Yeshaya Bassan. And goes on, he knows me very well, and don't bring about the argumentation and may the God of peace and truth grant you spiritual satisfaction with a long life, productive life. That's what he wrote to Rav Moshe Chagiz. So What ended up happening is Rav Moshe Chagiz, when he got this letter, he sent a letter to Rav Yaakov Pompers, from Frankfurt on Main. And we're going to come back to Rav Yaakov Pompers again tonight. And he says that to rouse the hearts and just, you know, scream it from the streets to decree and excommunicate with all power invested you. The work of this adolescent composes, all his actions should be scrutinized from now on. His work should be treated as heretical works and burned. And the adolescent and all his group should be deemed as mesisim umadichim. Especially this rake, which is Rabbi Yekusiel. He's coming to displace Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai from his rightful place. May Rabbi Kasil and thousands like him die, such a thing should never spread in Israel. Therefore, which you rend your hearts and not just your garments, tremendous chutzpah, this new form of tumah, in addition, which precedes our generation. Let's conclude the affair of this bachar, which he wasn't married at the time. Om Hashem is not chosen, lo bachar, and he flung behind his back his initial humility, and he writes with to me with arrogance. That's the way he took it. Who is this 23-year-old to tell me that what I did was wrong? I guess that's the way he took it. That's arrogance. Like, where's, you know? And
at the end of the letter, he's kind of a little pushy.
He writes that he gave away his guilt of arrogance, which is equivalent to idolatry. Okay, by making this protest, I saved my life from the repercussions which will arise from all of this. Okay, this was the letter Rav Chagiz wrote to Rav Papers.
He said that there's heretical, you know. He didn't read it.
Exactly.
So he's like,
right. We're looking at this.
Right.
I mean, I hear it. Just based on these letters, I'll show you something else also afterwards. Now, what happened is had this letter from Rav Yeshaya Basan to the Ramchal got there first, the letter that he sent out would not have made it. Would not have gone. Okay, so this is what Rabbi San wrote to the Ramchal. So by the time the Ramchal got the letter from his Rebbe, he had already written to Rav Moshe Chagiz. Regarding the essence of this matter, I tell you, I know, my son, I know that a person of your stature would not make a false statement. And I have no doubt that your statements are correct. You're God-fearing and you've never said any false. But these things are so unusual, I cannot hold myself back from asking you the following. How could you have reached a level above that of the Arizal, who sat and meditated almost totally withdrew from this world for so many years? I cannot be totally convinced until myself hear and see and examine this. Since I didn't see this thing, how can I testify on your behalf? I've only seen a very small part of your work, and I didn't have the time to really examine it when you came here to show it to me. According to what you write, they are only a drop of an ocean compared to the abundance of Torah thoughts. Hashem only knows the turmoil within me. I'd love to see you face to face, and I hope that I hope that then the joy would be abundant. I'm forced to travel to every week, different places, and if it were not for the difficulties of the winter and the mud, I would make a detour to come to you, besides for the expenses involved. Because of what I wrote, I won't be able to come. Maybe you and your prestigious group come to me. Then we would lovingly spend time together, and you could disclose these secrets together with my father-in-law. May Hashem protect him, for after all, he is the greatest expert of Kabbalah in our generation in Italy. Okay, so I think he did end up coming there and speaking with Rev, but I think that maybe at that point, this was all out. Again, this didn't take that long from one letter to the other letter and everything. He continues, in the meantime, it would be wonderful if you could send me an example of some of your prime work. What disturbs me now, he's giving it to his student. How could you have shown this to Rav Yekusiel? Don't you know how irresponsible the German and Polish Jews spread and distort the teachings of Kabbalah? I guess this is shows they may have seen. I don't know if they saw themselves as Sephardim, but they definitely did not see themselves as Ashkenazim. They have a long history of perverting and confounding the Kabbalistic wisdom, as it evident from the work Emek HaMelech. According to my opinion, this has been a major cause for the continuation of our exile. Okay, this besides the fact that the Ashkenazim were followers of Shabtai Tzvi, as is well known. You see yourself the damage these fabrications have made, for it caused the truth to be cast to the ground. This is the reason for Rav Chagiz's anger. Therefore, my son, be careful what you write to him, if you haven't done so already. To write respectfully, I cannot be more emphatic that your writing to him should be of a genuine defense, in a manner that will be accepted and in a very humble manner. That's the way you should write to him. So had he got this letter first, it may have everything may have been different, but he didn't. letter from a Rav Goyen, Rav Yeshaya Basan to the Ramchal. Did we do this letter yet? I mean, I'm not sure. Do you remember? I'm not sure where we got up to. We got up to slide 20. Let me just see for a second.
I don't think we had this.
We did not get this far yet?
Yeah, but we're like just hitting the new stuff.
I know we got somewhere around up to here. Okay, so the letter from Rav Gayan, Rav Yishai Basan to the Ramchal. I cannot be more emphatic that you're writing. Oh, this is the continuation of the letter. Okay, that would be accepted in a humble manner. It is best to act with the utmost modesty and discretion, for you know that the Arizal, due to our many sins, was punished because of the disclosures and revelations, and his crown was removed from the generation. In addition, our sages stated that the first tablets were broken because they were given with great fanfare, and evil eye prevailed on them. Okay, may Hashem protect you from evil and dwell in his house for many years. Okay.
What does it mean, his crown was removed?
He died. He died very young. He died. He was 39, I believe. The Arizal. He only spent 2 years with his prime Talmud, Rav Chaim Vital. Mm-hmm. So that was it. All the Kabbalah that we have from the Arizal came with basically those 2 years, maybe a little bit before the Rav Chaim Vital got there. But that was it. That's all he had. Okay, so letter from the Ramchal to Rav Yishai Basan. Okay, now he's writing him back. You should be aware that I have not reached the level of the Arizal's understanding, for all these things which I write were commonplace to him. It is only that he did not have permission to write it, and I did. That is why I've written so much, and it appears so strange. Regarding the fact that the Arizal sat alone and meditated for so long before receiving his revelations, behold, many others followed the same regimen, and perhaps even on a greater scale, yet they did not reach his heights. The truth is, and this is... Rav Yishai Basan is going to repeat this to all his, all of those on the other side, that only Hashem knows whom he wants to bring close to him. And the truth is that these things are not dependent on the merit of the individual, but rather the merit of the community. Through the love he has for Israel, he takes for himself as a medium he who is upright in his eyes according to the needs of the generation and the locations. In other words, basically he says it really has nothing to do with me. Or like, okay, it does have something, you have to be somewhere, but the fact, who does Hashem choose to go to, is really up to Hashem. The community, does he mean the community of Italy where he is? Does he mean the community of all of Klal Yisrael? I don't know what he means by that, but this is, he's coming not because of me, because of other reasons that have nothing to do with me. Okay, so Rabbi Yishai Basan to the Venetian Rabbinate. Okay, 1730, this is everything started in 1728, 29, and this is like towards the end. Not towards the end of it. This is the Torah's way of reaching to a conclusion. Is this the Torah's way of reaching a conclusion? Whether it be civil or capital legal proceedings, inquiry, investigation, there must have been some error here, for a judgment needs to be thoroughly thought through over time. Again, I guess he's referring to the second time that Rav Moshe Chagiz wrote to the Venetian rabbinate a second time. So, look, I got this letter again. Do something. I am very astounded that you have pronounced judgment to topple a great wall, which is the Ramchal, without reason, without consulting the elder of Binyamin HaKohen. This rebuke is not merely based on my sagacity, on my advice, but is voicing the concerns of the elder rabbi. This is Rav Binyamin HaKohen. Not everyone whose eyes are opened by Hashem is brought in to see his chamber of treasures and considered a prophet or a seer. There's nothing to do with prophecy, which is in an infinitely higher level. Only in the Holy Land does Hashem grant for those who merit his spiritual gift to take a view through his looking glass, and not in the land of darkness. So it's really amazing, because everything that the Ramchal experienced is not Nevuah, right? You could only imagine what Nevuah is. I mean, this is like just everything that he's been taught, all the Torah and all the vision, everything that he's seen, is nothing. It's not even on the level of Nevuah, not even close. And that's what Yishai. So he's responding very similarly to the Venetian rabbinate again, who's causing this. And he continues. Neither is the lofty level of Ruach HaKodesh granted here. Each one of these, prophecy and Ruach HaKodesh, has within it different levels. I guess they're not even calling it Ruach HaKodesh. I mean, we say Rashi had Ruach HaKodesh. I mean, people have Ruach HaKodesh. I don't know, maybe we throw around that term too easily. I don't know. But based on this letter, everything that the Ramchal has experienced isn't even Ruach HaKodesh and isn't even prophecy. As the Rambam in Parshas Lech Lecha, one who only reaches the level of seeing or hearing an angel is not considered a prophet of Hashem. There are many instances of such cases. Eliyahu frequented the Talmudic sages of Rav Hanan, repeated the teachings of Eliyahu in his, and Rav Hanan is the one that wrote Eliyahu Rabbah and Eliyahu Zuta. Similarly, Eliyahu frequented the yeshivas of the Gaonim. There have been many recorded cases of angels who were magidim and spoke to special, highly spiritual individuals. There were those in distant past and those of late. A great teacher of Yosef Cairo, who was outside Eretz Yisrael, and a magid appeared to him in Nicopolis while he was together with a group of scholars. We have this written down. The Shalah wrote this down in his sefer, and it was a Shavuos night, and the minhag was just first starting, and this was in the 1500s, to stay up all night. Now the minhag is like all through Klal Yisrael, Shavuos night, everybody stays up all night, and they learn all night. But in the 1500s, it was just first coming around. It wasn't like everybody doing it, just a few. So that in Nicopolis, where the Beis Yosef was at the time, before him and most of the people in that group moved to Sfat. So the Shlah records, the Shlah himself wasn't there. Rav Horowitz wasn't there at the time, I don't think so, but he wrote later on he wrote what happened, and in the middle, while they were all sitting around talking the first night, a voice came out from the Beis Yosef and was talking to all of those that were there. And the voice said, by the way, it said, because you're not a minion, you didn't reach even, you, had you been a minion, you would have reached a higher level. So they were so, sad and upset, and they met the others of the Chevra the next day, and they told them what happened. So they all made up, they're going to go again, the next night. So they stayed up two nights for Rosh Hashanah that night. And then it says that the Maggid again came to the Beis Yosef earlier, and he told them more secrets, and he came earlier, and he said, Yashar Koach, you're being a minion, you've reached a high level. And so this is what they're referring to. Another Goan, Reb Menachem Azaria Afano, received communication from a Maggid here in Italy. As trustworthy people have told us, the Arizal was in Egypt when he was called by Hashem to enter the Holy of Holies. All of the above are not cases of prophecy, but rather divine dispensation, for he is close to all those who call on him. Okay, this is what he's writing to the rabbinate. What's the big deal that he's getting, he has a magid. It's not unheard of. It's not common, but it's not unheard of. And we know of other instances. After having spoken about the possibility of a divine connection that transcends time and place, I would like to give you a very brief description of the person over whom you've made this turmoil and tumult. I raised him. He never went after trivialities. I mentioned this letter in the very beginning last time when describing him. He never followed his desires. He granted him a discerning ear. He was like a son to me. He learned everything I had to give him. He read through all my writings and insights. He even studied Eitz Chaim, which is Rav Chaim Vital's presentation of the Arizal. It was then that his mind began to plumb the depths. He has privately toiled in Torah, shared him with his friends, his insights, guided them, and gave them understanding. It is no wonder that Hashem would choose such a person. Even though he's so young, one can surely rely that such a person would only produce works of high quality. Behold, regarding the Magidim, did the celestial lion, the Arizal, teach us that they come in many forms. There are great ones and minor ones. They come in many varieties. In other words, these Magidim are not like, it's not like one level. It could be a small maggid, it could be a big maggid. So maybe he's getting a lower level maggid. Again, this has all come from the Arizal. What does it mean? What is the difference? I have no idea what the difference between a lower and a higher maggid is. The test to know whom we should trust and feel happy and confident is when truth issues from the person's lips, and all his words are built upon it, and all his actions are pleasing, and his mouth brings forth these secrets in succession, which are sweeter than honey and the drippings of honeycombs, as is stated in Sefer Chesed Li'Avram. So, how do you know if it's a a maggid from the dark side or the good side or the, you know, the right side is to know if he's always saying the truth and his actions are pleasing and he brings in secrets. These, I guess, there was somehow you could tell, you listen to what he says. There are other, even non-Jews, that come into contact with some sort of maggid, and they write that the maggidim that come to them are liars. They'll swear the absolute truth, but they say lies, and they're not accurate all the time. You know, so it's not a, you know, again, that they're getting a maggid, not necessarily from the side of Kedusha, but from the side of Tumah.
Who do you know if it's
not
Jewish?
That, so there's, I forgot the name of it, also in about the 1700s. The book is called Many, Many Masters.
Many Lives, Many Masters.
Huh? What? Many Lives, Many Masters. But do you know who wrote that book? But it was somebody who was in contact, that came in contact with many magidim or many, many souls, and as he writes that you can't trust them; they lie. So I mean, and he says similar things. He describes similar things to what's happening here, how it comes. He continues on, it is no wonder that there are many great and wonderful men of piety and good deeds who have not merited to receive communication, for the qualities necessary are not detectable by man. The person whom he so desires, does he choose to bring close, and who is going to tell him who to choose? And I was like, that's it, it's not, you know, Hashem chose him, not because of the Ramchal necessarily, because Hashem wanted to choose him. Okay. Okay, now the Ramchal, now again, this is a letter which is going to the Ramchal after the Ramchal had already written to Rav Moshe Chagiz, and Rav Moshe Chagiz rewrote to Rav Pompers and all the Rabbanut, all the Bezdins and all the Rabbanim in Europe, again a second time. And he says, in any case, so now he's writing to, again, Ramchal. He says, in any case, the conflagration... The machlokus has erupted due to Rabbi Yekusiel's letter. Say what you may. It was, I guess, the Ramchal was saying something like to the effect, it's gamzul tov. It was all for the good. But he's saying it's a terrible. It was incorrect and unbefitting, and it's filled with gross exaggerations. Behold, he writes, he knows of all the gulgulim and tikkunim for each man. In summary, there is nothing hidden from him. When I saw these disturbing words, even I became distraught. As you saw in one of my letters, I was put slightly at ease, however, when you wrote that you had not reached even half the level of the Rizal's understanding. Behold, from your admission, the majority of Rabbi Gusiel's letter is contradicted and is full of errors. This is what Rav Chagiz and his compatriots had in mind when they said that your letter is self-contradictory. This is because you gave your total approbation to the words of Rabbi Gusiel. When, you know, as he said, as you said those words, it was as it was accurately described in the letter of my associate, Rabbi Gusiel. I judge you favorably. And I said to myself, your statement only refers to the communication of the Magidim and the works. And the works that you wrote, not to the level of your comprehension. The rabbis of Hamburg, however, didn't even think of such an explanation. I feel, therefore, that it was terrible how you wrote to Rabbi Gusiel. You should merely have stated your innocence and to reply with wisdom and to resolve the difficulties that they had with you and to remove all doubts from their mind. Rabbi Gusiel didn't have any common sense, and it was he who started this machlokas. If these things would have slowly been revealed, this controversy would never reach such epic proportions. It has shaken the world from its very place, and the pillars are being torn asunder. Also, in regards to the point which Rav Chagiz finds to be strange, that you're still unmarried, it is not a complaint which lacks substance. My father-in-law and myself have also spoken quietly among ourselves about this. We have also spoken about the fact that you are not growing a beard. You know, again, very strange things. Like, well, you know, this is so uncommon. This is so not typical of... He was, again, 23, 25 at the time. They were getting married in their teens, you know, back then. The 25-year-old, a great Talmud Chacham without a wife. Very uncommon. Not a beard. A Jewish thing was to have a beard. How could you not have a beard? Also, the only way to shave in those days, I don't think they had the powder yet. But the shave was with a razor. So, I mean, the only other way to do is a scissor and get very close. It bothers me that you're constantly talking about Mashiach, something that casts doubts, and perhaps there does exist some admixture of the Sitra Acher. This is one of the positive signs that the Maggid is really coming in disguise. God forbid. For this is the way of the Sitra Acher, to confound the mind regarding Mashiach and to make Israel stumble. This is what Rav Chis hinted to you by quoting the Sefer Chassidim, chapters 205 and 206. I'm going to show you what it says there in a minute. Look through it carefully. Please make the effort of clarifying this matter and resolving my doubts. For my heart is still shaking from what you wrote me, that all of these communications occur when you have fallen in a trance on your face. This is one of the things that causes me to doubt that, God forbid, this is being caused by some foreign impure source. So now he's talking to his student, first of all, telling him what you wrote was wrong. And now all other things. You don't have a beard, you're not married, and you're telling me that you're talking about Mashiach all the time, right? And you're getting these and you're getting these things that are in a trance. Okay, this is the Reb Yehuda HaChassid. This is the 205. He who becomes involved with imposing oaths upon angels or demons, or using sorcerer's incantations, will not come to any good end, and he or his children will suffer constant pain. Therefore, a person should distance himself from such activity, for in the end he will be beyond help. So many have done this, and so many have asked the other forces, some of them or their children became impoverished, became apostates, and became deathly ill. The only proper thing is to pray to Hashem, blessed be He. I guess if you're trying to know the future, trying to know things, don't you force, you make oaths, and you make force these, and I guess it's somehow some sort of an oath, some sort of something to do to force these angels or neshamos to tell you things. That's going to lead to very, very, very bad things with him, his children, pain, being impoverished. And number six, if you see that a person prophesizes about Mashiach, you should know that he was involved in with sorcery or demons or divination through the ineffable name. I guess somehow you say Hashem's name. Because he has troubled the angels, they misinform him about Mashiach, so that he will publicize it to the world. At the end, he will be the object of embarrassment and shame in the eyes of the world as a result of bothering the angels. Or, alternatively, the demons come to him and teach him calculations and secrets that will result in shaming him and those that believe in him. So these are two different things that Rav Chagiz hinted to. He said, look at these 205 and 206 of the Sefer Chassidim. And this is what the Sefer Chassidim wrote. I think he was a Rishon, around the Yehuda Chassid, if it's the first Rebbe Yehuda Chassid.
At least 2, 3, or 400 years before.
Yeah. Okay, now the Ramchal is talking, is sending a letter back to the Rebbe Yeshaya Bassan. All right, it is impossible for me to put my mind at rest when His Excellency has intimated, even if only it be a doubt, that if that is the case, who knows, even if the words of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai are really true, and most certainly the words of the Arizal. In other words, you're suspecting me of everything that's coming to me from the bad side, from the dark side. He says, if that's the case, if there's really no way of knowing, then how do you even know that what Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai got was right? He wrote the Zohar and everything. Perhaps the source of all of these revelations is from the Sitra Acher, God forbid. In all truth, I consider such a claim that the Sitra Acher has the power to explain every hidden secret there, to be heresy, God forbid. Then where is the God of justice? He has forsaken his world without seeing what is happening. Behold, that which causes you to have doubts, my speaking at length about Mashiach, tell me, my master, doesn't Reb Shimon bar Yochai speak about the subject far more than I, especially in his Sefer Tikkunim and the Raya Mehemna? There are no two lines without the mention of two Mashiachs. The words of the Sefer Chassidim were directed, 205 and 206, were directed to someone who prophesizes regarding the date of Mashiach's coming. This is a self-evident proof that the purpose of this revelation was to cause him embarrassment. This is only relevant when predicting a date, which I have never done in my whole life. It was that, yes, I talk about Mashiach, but I'm not predicting when he's coming. I don't try to figure out, is he coming now or then? So Ramchal understood Reb Yehuda HaChassid to mean, if the person's trying to figure out when Mashiach is coming, and he's using these oaths to get these malachim and neshamos to tell him things, they're gonna give him false calculations. They're gonna tell him things, then he's gonna end up being shamed. But that's only it. And the fact that the Sitra Acher has control of the spiritual world, says Chas v'Shalom, how could that be? If you're gonna say it there, you're gonna say that that's the case, then even Reb Shem Bar Yochai had been suspect. I did hear my Rosh Yeshiva Rav Hanuch Leibowitz was once talking, and he said that the Vilna Gaon, the Gra, was offered a Maggid to learn with, and he refused the Maggid. And he refused the Maggid for one of two reasons. One, he said the Maggid may be from... One is he said that Amelis Betara, that he wanted to learn Torah be Amelis. And he gets it from a Malach, it won't be with that extra effort. And secondly is that since he's out of Eretz Yisrael, he can't be 100% sure that the Maggid is from the other side, from the Sitra Acher, and he won't be able to detect. He'll tell him something which isn't 100% truth, and that truth will infiltrate all his learning and cause eventually a terrible thing to come out. That's why Rosh Yeshiva said that the Gra did not want to take a Maggid. He was offered it, and he refused. Okay, but the Ramchal said it can't be. He says, okay, so now Rabbi Yishaya Basan is responding back. The Arizal taught us in Shara HaNavua, chapter 2, that a Maggid is revealed to a person in accordance with his spiritual level and enormity of his deeds. It is possible for a Maggid to be made up of good and evil. The good part relates to the truth and the evil part to falsehood. The Arizal specifically wrote in the Sefer HaKavanos of Tikkun Chatzos that from the day the temple was destroyed and the Torah was burnt, its inner secrets were given over to alien forces. This is known as Golus HaTorah. Behold, even though I am actually very insignificant, I can say that the eyes of all of Israel are watching me now, and all their mouths are pointed in my direction. I don't possess the absolute certainty, however, that would enable me to gird myself with a sword and to fight against those that would destroy you, for I myself still harbor doubts. So he's saying, look, you know, how do I really, really know that what you're getting is from the good side and not from the bad, from the Sitra Acher? You should know that I've heard reliable reports that at the time of Shabtai Tzvi, I think we quoted this letter earlier, at the time of Shabtai Tzvi, there were many great thinkers in the Middle East upon whom the Spirit rested as they fell down on their faces in a swoon, and they composed awesome and much published works, which were astonishing to behold. The greatest of them all was Nathan of Gaza, who inscribed and wrote profound expositions. He also said in a similar fashion to what you are now saying, that this is all in... added, you know, this is not the original. Whoever wrote this in English added this line in a similar. He also said that he was only coming in the wake of revelations of the Arizal to explain that which the Arizal had not explained and to reveal that which the Arizal had not revealed. The sfarim of his that we possess, Sefer Habriya and Sefer Zmir Aritzim, are built upon the basic principles which we articulated. Notice we have sfarim on Kabbalah that we are working on what Rav Nathan of Gaza expounded, what he got.
Do we still have those?
Yeah, I think so. Are built upon the. He also brought many back from sin and gave tikkunim to myriads of people. They say that the souls of the righteous were revealed to him. Even so, it all ended up in chaos and they were lost, besides for the evil which they caused. So here he is, he's talking to Ramchal. You know, look, you think you may be getting from the right, from the good side, but it may be like, you know, you say, well, look at all the goods that's happening. Well, you know, there were the Rav Nathan of Gaza and many scores of people were also getting these revelations, and it wasn't. We see now that it wasn't from the good side; it was from the Sitra Acher. Okay, so the Rav Chal responds: the entire Torah has not been given over to these forces of evil, God forbid, but only a restrictive portion. It is therefore impossible to think that they can explain every secret in every place, God forbid. The whole world would become destroyed. In other words, if you're going to tell me that the evil forces can get into every single aspect of Kabbalah, that's it. The whole world would be destroyed. I've already told His Eminence how, thank God, I was given the power to ask and to gain knowledge in every area of our Holy Torah without exception. Without a doubt, this could not have come about through the Sitra Achra. So I guess the Ramchal held that the Sitra Achra only has shlita, only has power, only has in a certain area, but not everything. And Ramchal says, I'm able to ask in all areas. And I'm getting, you know, the real thing. I'm getting from the good source. Okay. I'm wondering if this is a good place to stop. He just also said, like, even though Rav Chagiz meant to cause harm, Hashem meant it for good. From that day on, when people found out that I have Magidim, when my secret became known, many have returned to from sin, thank God, and the Torah has returned to its rightful host. I guess it was a wave of Bali Tshuva. You know, they realize, oh my gosh, Hashem is talking through Malachim to this person. It's there, it's all right, you know, and they're hearing things, and therefore it made a tremendous impression. So I'm thinking, we still didn't get to the fact, and maybe we'll pick it up next time. We'll pick it up from this point, because what's going to eventually happen is his writings are going to first be taken away from him and given to Rabbi San for safekeeping. And eventually his writings are going to be given over to the Frankfurt Beis Din, and they're going to bury them in a way that it was destroyed. I mean, I gave a spoiler alert. So, and then the end of his life was in Amsterdam in Eretz Yisrael. So I'm thinking maybe this would be a good place to stop. And Mr. Shem will just, next week we'll finish off with the Ramchal, the total ending of it all, and if there's still time, we'll start the next one. I think I'm ready to go to after this would be the Besht, the Baal Shem Tov. Because Baal Shem Tov felt one of his missions were to bring back those that were following the secret shop sites Phoenix, and also the Frankists that we spoke about that were actually eventually went to Christianity. Rabbi, I'm sorry.
What's the difference between the Frankists and the
Shem Tov? Because Frankists, they converted to Christianity.
Totally.